If the meeting happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, we go on to the next step.
The Trump-Kim summit may be in doubt amid Pyongyang accusations. It's Friday, May 18th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China and the United States staking out trade positions. India's seniors teach the young. Protecting Australia's koalas. Child health education. And a plastic trash barrier. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korea's top negotiator denounced the South Korean government as, quote, ignorant and incompetent Thursday, the latest in a series of recent inflammatory statements from Pyongyang after suddenly canceling talks with its southern neighbor amid U.S.-South Korean air combat drills. South Korea is pushing to keep the planned summit between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump on track after Pyongyang warned it may call off the meeting over U.S. demands that it dismantle its nuclear weapons program. President Trump was asked a short time ago by reporters at the White House about the status of the summit.
Mr. President, North Korea, can I ask you a question about North Korea?
Well, nothing has changed on North Korea that we know of. We have not been told anything, and if it does, that's fine. If it doesn't, I think we'll probably have a very successful meeting, but we have not been told anything. We're just reading stories like you are. We've heard certain things from South Korea, but we'll see what happens. If the meeting happens, it happens, and if it doesn't, we go on to the next step.
Ri Sung-kwon, chairman of the North's Committee for Peaceful Reunification of the Country, said unless the serious situation which led to the suspension of the North-South high-level talks is settled, it will never be easy to sit down face-to-face again with the present regime of South Korea. The fate of the June 12th summit in Singapore was thrown into doubt Wednesday after North Korea First Vice Foreign Minister Kim Kai-kwon said Pyongyang will have to reconsider whether to take part in the summit if the United States continues to demand that the regime unilaterally abandon its nuclear weapons arsenal. President Trump said both sides continue to plan for the summit.
We are continuing to negotiate in terms of location. The location, it's to where to meet, how to meet, rooms, everything else. And they've been negotiating like nothing happened. But if you read the newspapers, maybe it won't happen. I can't tell you yet. I will tell you very shortly. We're going to know very soon.
Trump also said a second recent meeting between Chinese President Xi Jinping and Kim seemed to be behind the North's shifting positions on the upcoming summit. The North Korean statement was the third in the past few days that appeared to erode a period of improved relations between North Korea, South Korea, and the United States. North Korea abruptly canceled high-level talks scheduled for Wednesday with the South, citing the current joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises. Our top story is developing, with the latest details to be found, on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. North Korea cancellation threats a bargaining tool, analysts say, after Malaysia's political earthquake, a massive corruption probe. 2 years in, Myanmar's NLD falls short on campaign promises. Pakistan defends allowing U.S. diplomat to exit country. Nepal's Maoists, liberal communists unite as biggest left party. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. China said while it doesn't want to see trade tensions with the United States increase, it is prepared for any outcome in 2 days of trade talks that are taking place right now in Washington, and says it will defend its own interests. China Ministry of Commerce spokesman Gao Feng said Beijing hopes the two sides can get along under the principle of mutual respect and equal consultation. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and Chinese Vice Premier Liu He are leading their respective delegations. The talks come as President Donald Trump suggested interest in resolving the sanctioning of Chinese telecom giant ZTE Corporation, which uses U.S. components in many of its products and was penalized for violating trade bans on North Korea and Iran. Andrew Polk is founder of the investment consultancy Trivium China in Beijing. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty China appears genuinely interested in ratcheting down trade frictions with Washington.
Our understanding is that Liu He is coming sort of with an open checkbook in terms of being willing to find ways to buy more American goods by China to help reduce the trade surplus, which is, you know, one of the key asks that the U.S. administration has. So they're coming in, you know, ready to make a deal, but also wanting to let it be known, especially domestically, that, you know, they are going to take a hard line if the U.S. takes a hard line. They're not going to back down or be soft. But that being said, their main interest is in finding a solution.
Since we last talked, President Trump came out and suggested that he would try to resolve the sanctioning matter surrounding the Chinese telecom giant ZTE. That may also be part of the larger negotiations. How important would resolving that be to China?
So that's very important to China, and it seems that President Xi has put that at the top of the sort of negotiating priorities list, that he's made it known that he wants that to be a part of the solution. And so the tech side and the trade side and investment side all are factoring in together, and so it's all part of the picture. It's unclear to me, and I think unclear to a lot of people, exactly what caused the U.S. president, to tweet that and to offer that up. But whatever the reason, it's certainly a part of the overall negotiation.
Well, he tweeted on Wednesday that his inclination to resolve the matter surrounding ZTE does not indicate that the U.S. is folding on the larger trade issue.
Yeah, well, I think that's mostly a message to his domestic constituency and his audience in Washington, D.C. more broadly. I think he's taken some heat from both the media and members of his own party on what seemed like a unilateral walk back of a policy that was designed to punish ZTE for cheating on its agreement not to break U.S. sanctions.
What are your hopes that this will be resolved without any kind of so-called tariff or trade war?
I'm relatively optimistic on this week in particular. It seems that both sides are actively kind of looking for a solution. The U.S., giving some ground on ZTE may help find a short-term solution. The Chinese being willing to have their checkbook out and apparently being willing to bring down some existing tariffs on agricultural products from the U.S. But still, the longer-term issues are unresolved.
Andrew Polk said aside from the trade imbalance, those long-term issues include forced technology transfers and greater Chinese market access. But he said at the heart of it all is managing the economic competition between the world's top two economies as China moves up the value chain and becomes more assertive on the world stage. Happening now in Asia, Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak, who appeared untouchable until a surprise election last week, ended his coalition's six-decade grip on power, now faces a new corruption investigation launched by those who defeated him at the ballot box. Malaysian police raided the former leader's house and other properties on Thursday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. You've made it to the end of the week. We're glad to be here with you on VOA Asia. In India, senior citizens are tutoring students as part of an initiative that aims at simultaneously helping underprivileged students and improving the health of older people as it engages them with younger ones. The government-funded Intergenerational Learning Center, launched with the backing of India's premier hospital, has an eye on addressing the needs of both the country's huge young population and the growing numbers of elderly people. Anjana Pasricha visited one of the schools where the project is being implemented.
By teaching how a triangle can be converted into a rectangle of the same area, Retired engineer Chandrasekhar Rai is giving students of grade 6 a practical demonstration into the mathematical basis of scientific calculations. He is part of a group of volunteer educators who are helping transform the classroom experience at Purba Madhyamik Vidyalaya in Noida on Delhi's outskirts. The underprivileged students of this middle school usually lagged behind. But 6 months of coaching by these teachers has helped many like Payal Somwal graduate to grade 7 with good grades.
When the lesson is practical, I understand easily. I never liked math, now I do.
Equally importantly, the lively interaction with the children is helping 66-year-old Rai.
Definitely it has transformed me. I have gained energy from them. So when we meet them, they are it's a big powerhouse. We can say it's full of energy. So that energy comes to me and I feel younger.
A geriatrician at the All India Institute of Medical Sciences in New Delhi, Prashoon Chatterjee launched the Intergenerational Learning Center after he noticed stress and depression increasing among older people. Inspired by a similar one he saw in Cleveland, Ohio, the project is being spearheaded by the non-profit Healthy Aging India. He hopes it will change the prevailing concept of ageism in a country where a dramatic increase in life expectancy has led to a growing population of elderly people.
You are aged, you cannot do anything, you just stay at home. You are okay, you are a respectable person, but you are no more productive the way you used to. So please, hold on. That attitude has to go.
Dr. Chatterjee is optimistic the project will reduce age-related diseases while stemming the high rate of school dropouts.
If you are engaged, if you are happy, if you are productive, your stress will be zero. And that is our purpose.
It appears to be working. Teaching Hindi language energizes Mohini Kumar, whom students call grandmother.
I'm going to get the greetings from the children. Good morning, Dadi. Namaste, Dadi. Things like that. That gives me the enthusiasm.
And after the extra coaching, Mohammed Faizan feels his dreams of becoming a police officer could turn into reality.
In Hindi, English, math, I have made real progress. Now I get good marks.
As heading to class after morning prayers becomes a more joyful experience and also makes educators smile, the project is set to expand to 17 schools across the Indian capital. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Coming up, protecting cute but vulnerable koalas. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news from VOA Asia. Pakistani authorities say security forces have hunted down and killed a senior pro-Islamic State militant commander, wanted for slaughtering more than 100 minority Shiite Muslims and police personnel. The overnight raid also killed two Afghan suicide bombers. Security forces captured what they described as one injured terrorist. Visit VOA Asia Facebook, your daily destination for news. This is VOA Asia. As we continue, a koala hospital and new wildlife reserves are the focus of one of Australia's boldest plans to protect the vulnerable marsupial. Almost 25,000 hectares of state forest will be set aside for koalas in New South Wales State, which will also set up a new clinic north of Sydney to provide specialist care for sick and injured animals. Phil Mercer fills us in from Sydney.
Koalas are officially listed as vulnerable to extinction in New South Wales. The state government is to spend $34 million on a range of measures to protect the iconic marsupial. Special reserves will be set up where the animals will be able to breed freely. The koala population in New South Wales has fallen by a quarter over the past two decades. It's estimated there are 36,000 koalas left in the state. Their numbers have also fallen in other parts of Australia. The animals face various threats, including a loss of habitat due to land clearing, attacks by dogs, bushfires, heatwaves, and road accidents. A sexually transmitted disease, chlamydia, is also harming the health of many koalas. Special measures will also be put in place to help drivers avoid koalas that stray onto highways, including better signs. Tunnels and specially made bridges have also allowed wildlife to traverse roads while avoiding cars and trucks. New South Wales Environment Minister Gabrielle Upton hopes to set up a network of koala and wildlife hospitals to help injured animals.
This is so there are places that we can have resident expertise in one place, in places where we know that koala populations are present and need to be sustained and therefore increased over time. We're going to trial chlamydia vaccinations. Chlamydia is a disease that impacts them most severely on the north coast in New South Wales. There are some really practical parts of this package that address some of the roadkill hotspots. We have had some success with underpasses and overpasses in areas where they know they have core habitat. We need to ensure we have the right road signs, the right fencing.
The new koala clinic will be set up in Port Stephens, north of Sydney. It will join an existing hospital in the regional town of Port Macquarie that began treating injured marsupials in 1973. Conservationists have welcomed the new facility, but argue that the New South Wales state government's multi-million dollar plan doesn't address the number one threat to koalas, land clearing and logging. The koala lives in trees and has large furry ears, sharp claws adapted for climbing and no tail. It features in many Aboriginal stories of creation and is considered a totemic species. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news from VOA Asia, U.S. officials and politicians say they are increasingly frustrated and looking for ways to fight back against what they see as China's use of its market power to impose, quote, politically correct behavior on American companies. Airlines, retailers, and hoteliers have all been pressured to alter products and promotions that offended Beijing. This and other stories are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, leaders of development agencies say the fight against poverty needs a more aggressive focus on the health and education of the young and vulnerable. NGO and developmental officials spoke at the Milken Institute Global Conference in Los Angeles recently, where World Bank President Jim Yong Kim warned social unrest will spread without a business-like approach to philanthropy. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan has more from Los Angeles.
1 in 10 people around the world lives in extreme poverty, which the World Bank defines as earning less than $1.90 a day. Malnutrition, stunted growth, and cognitive impairment affect over 30% of children in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, leaving them unprepared for the automated economy of the future. So warns World Bank President Jim Yong Kim, who says the numbers are improving, but not fast enough.
Many, many, many people will find themselves undereducated and without the skills to be able to compete in the economy of the future. And so many countries are going to go down the path of fragility, conflict, violence, and then, of course, extremism and migration. That's going to happen if we don't change the mindset.
There are success stories in the battle against disease and illiteracy, says a former head of USAID who now leads the Rockefeller Foundation.
When you look at countries like Rwanda, they've achieved a 70% reduction in child mortality in just one decade. So we know that nations can be successful. What it takes, though, is more political will, more focus on science and technology.
China is a new player in the world of development. By one count, its loans and aid to 140 countries exceeded $350 billion over a 14-year period. China's new aid agency has fewer restrictions than Western agencies on their loans regarding corruption, governance, and human rights.
On the Chinese side, they basically claim that their form of interaction, which is basically doing business, that is preferable to the way that Western institutions have engaged in the past.
China's growing involvement in developing economies worries some, but Furchen says the jury is still out on its impact. World Bank lending totaled nearly $60 billion last year for improving infrastructure or meeting basic needs like health and education. Kim says the bank will release a ranking of nations in its first human capital index to compare investments and human needs on a nation-to-nation basis. One who works in the health sector welcomes the approach.
And so if we don't think about people as being part of our asset, the biggest asset class really we have is our talents as people, then we're never going to unlock that potential for the creativity, for the next generation of innovation, for the next cure that we have in the marketplace.
These analysts say a stable and prosperous world requires a focus on human needs, and in the end, that's good business. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
According to the University of California, in 1950, the world produced about 2 million tons of plastic products. By 2015, the production increased to 380 million tons. And if it continues at this pace, by the year 2050, the weight of plastic waste in the world's oceans may equal that of all fish. Researchers in the Netherlands say they found an efficient and environmentally safe way for stopping plastic trash floating in rivers and from entering our oceans. VOA's George Pudich tells us more about bubbles.
In our time, it is hard to find a beach or a river bank without any trace of plastic trash. On the surface, it is relatively easy to set a barrier and collect trash for disposal or recycling. It is much harder to do so when the trash is partially submerged. Experimenting with the technology used in oil industry to contain oil spills, researchers in the Netherlands devised a way for stopping the flow of plastic trash at any depth. Their bubble barrier consists of a perforated pipe placed on the bottom of the river. The air pumped through the pipe creates a wall of bubbles that constantly rises to the surface. The upward flow of the bubbles brings the trash to the surface, where it collects on either side of the river and is easy to pick up and remove. Testing the air wall in the artificial river built in the Deltares Institute for Water Management, scientists quickly realized its efficiency is related not only to the size of the air bubbles, but also to the air pressure and the layout of the pipe.
It turned out to be a really trade-off between low amount, too low amount, so then you don't have an influence on the flow. And if you have a bit too much air, then all plastic is thrown over the sill. So it's really by trial and error we try to optimize it. So.
Last year, researchers moved out of the lab, placing a 200-meter air curtain in the river Aisel, where the air bubbles had to compete with the river current.
In both experiments, we could collect 80%, and in the Aisel, 82 to 89% of our test materials.
The bubble barrier does not affect shipping traffic or marine life. In addition, it increases the oxygen level in the water and helps stop the growth of toxic blue algae. George Pudich, VOA News.
As we prepare to take a short break for the weekend, we know that news about North Korea will be continuing. We invite you to follow it all at VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com, until we join again on Monday morning. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, and you can download us as a podcast if you like. Take VOA Asia wherever you go. Listen to us anytime you like. You can also hear us on the radio in many great stations across Asia, like the voice of Chungrung Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chungrung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. Hello to everybody there who is listening. Thank you. And we also thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Keith Holmes, managing editor Diane Gao, and of course our VOA Asia team that includes Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day.